Welcome, Pewter Report readers, viewers, and listeners to a brand new edition of the Pewter Report podcast, energized by Celsius, the official energy drink of PewterReport.com and the Pewter Report podcast. It is a Wednesday edition of the show. Want to say hello to all the Pewter people that are filing into the chat as we get this show going underway. Today's topic, make or break seasons for these Buccaneers. There are a handful of Tampa Bay Bucs heading into this 2024 season that may or may not be on the hot seat just a little bit. Will this be their last year with the Buccaneers? Can they kind of change the tides towards their direction and keep them for the near future? We're going to talk about all of that on today's show. I'm your host, Matt Matera. Joined with me is a very special guest. Very happy to have him on as he was able to give us his time commitment today, kind of last second, so we appreciate him. He is the co-host of the Locked On Bucs podcast. You can find it everywhere podcasts can be found, including on YouTube, and he's the deputy editor of Bucs Nation. It is James Yarko. James, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Happy to be on, happy to be joining you, and excited to talk about some of these make or break guys.
Yeah, there certainly is a number of players that we will be talking about. A couple on offense, a couple on defense, and some very notable names as well. But before we get into that, James, why don't you just tell everybody a little bit of your background covering the Bucs and what you're doing right now as we enter a busy time in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I've been covering the Bucs for probably the better part of 10 years now. And of course been with the Locked On Podcast Network for a long time. And now I've taken over with my former co-host, David Harrison, moving on to Locked On Commanders. It's just me over there 5 days a week. As you mentioned, on all the podcast platforms on YouTube, and then of course, deputy editor over at SB Nation's BucsNation.com, and, been covering them over there for a while. Of course, former Bucs Nation writer, Bailey Adams with you guys. Yep. We were talking about him a little bit pre-show, and it's been an interesting roller coaster going from the pre-Jameis years through the Jameis years through the Brady years, and now we're in the Baker era. So it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, the Bucs have had very polarizing quarterbacks throughout the past couple of seasons. I mean, Jameis, for better or for worse, polarizing. You either loved him, you hated him. He was electric just as far as like an entertainment standpoint. I understand Bucs fans may not have loved that as much. But just from the outside NFL fan looking in, Jameis was a content machine. Tom Brady, I think it goes without saying, greatest of all time, what he meant to the Bucs, turning around this team. And then Baker Mayfield adding this new chapter of quarterback to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. If they made a book out of just the history of Bucs quarterbacks, even going back to like Vinny Testaverde, Steve Spurrier, the whole Steve Young situation, that would be a heck of a book. I know I would definitely buy it.
Oh yeah, no doubt. And there was a book that came out a few years back called The Yucks, which was a really interesting read. If your listeners or viewers haven't checked that out before, check it out. It's actually pretty good. And it's about kind of, it's crazy to go back and look at the expansion draft that used to be when the Bucs and the Seahawks came into the league versus what it is now.
Yeah.
And basically the Bucs had no shot, like from the jump. It should be no surprise that they went, you know, 0 for their first 24 games. But yeah, some really, really incredible tidbits in there, and it's a lot of fun to go through and read that. So it chronicles a little bit of the issues with the quarterback, and of course the Doug Williams issues.
Yes.
With, you know, the ownership back then. So, but no, I'm 100% with you. Someone should write a book about the history of Buccaneers quarterbacks. Maybe you and I sit down and write that together.
Yeah. Yeah. A little busy right now with the off season, but maybe next off season, it could be something that I'd be interested in, and great to have a little piece of Bucs history. So appreciate you bringing that up. Appreciate all the people in the chat right now. A lot of people excited that James is on the show, as Emily says. Hi, everyone. Great combo, Matt and James. Let's get this going. Go Bucs. Now, we just mentioned Baker Mayfield a minute ago. He's not on the hot seat. We know he's good to go. Signed that 3-year contract, 100 mil, 50 million guaranteed. But Baker Mayfield was also a big part of this free agent. And this offseason for the Buccaneers, or maybe lack of getting to free agency, those are the two big moves, obviously, keeping Baker and Mike Evans before they got to the free agency level and started that bidding war. So between Baker, Mike, Levante, all the other moves that the Bucks have made, whether it's re-signing or bringing in some new guys, James, just give us your overall thoughts on how you think Jason Light and company have done this offseason.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up. I was actually having this exact conversation with my youngest son today because, you know, we were talking about the Stephon Diggs trade. Yes. And he goes, you know, the Bucks didn't have any money. They couldn't do anything. And all these other teams are doing all this stuff. And I said, really, if you sit down and think about it, you had Baker Mayfield, who was one of the top quarterbacks hitting free agency. You have yes. Mike Evans, who was one of the top receivers hitting free agency. You have Antoine Winfield Jr., who was arguably one of the best defensive players, not just safeties, but defensive players hitting free agency. And the Bucks got all of them. Yes. And I said, if this was the Las Vegas Raiders, everyone would have been talking about what an incredible offseason they had bringing in those three guys. And then you throw in Lavonte David. So, you know, I think they've done a great job in free agency. And then you throw in bringing back Jordan Whitehead to go yes. to the back end with Antoine Winfield Jr. I think it's been a great free agency that the Bucks have had because some of the best players that were available were right there in-house. So it's not as sexy as the headlines that you would see on NFL Network or ESPN or whatever of this guy moving teams or that guy moving teams. But when you keep all of your own guys that are, you know, some of the most coveted, that's a great offseason. So I really like that they stuck to the plan, that they stuck with these things, and now they can grow and build off of the success, the to some surprising success of last year.
Yeah, there's no rule in the NFL that says that you can't like re-sign your own guys and still have a great offseason. I think
right.
that part of the, I guess, like the lack of not excitement, because I think Bucks fans are still excitement, but the lack of like, oh wow, the Bucks are making moves and things like that, is that there's not necessarily that shiny new toy that is now with Tampa Bay. Even their biggest new, and I'm putting in quotations, new free agent signing was a guy that already played for the Buccaneers and won a Super Bowl. So the importance of getting Baker back and Mike Evans, keeping that continuity, that chemistry was so important. Even Antoine Winfield Jr., I know it's a franchise tag right now, but odds are that they're going to sign him to a new deal this by the end of the summer. That was really important. And even some of the smaller moves, like Suo Opeta and Bredesen, it at least brings competition to starting left guard, which is vacant going into this year. And I think a little bit of an upgrade as well. So, I mean, I can't see how anyone would give the Bucks any other grade besides an A this offseason because they brought back everybody. And the last point about Baker, because we're going to talk a lot about Baker Mayfield on tomorrow's show when we have Greg Cassell from NFL Films joining us. So we'll talk even more about Baker Mayfield. But let's not forget that Baker is still the third highest paid quarterback in the NFC South. So Kirk Cousins still getting paid more than Baker. Derek Carr, I don't know how, is still getting paid more than Baker Mayfield. So again, hats off to the Bucks front office, Jason Light, Jackie Davidson, Mike Greenberg for a job well done. But with the topic of today's show, they might have to make some tough decisions next year. And so we're looking into our crystal ball just a little bit when it comes to these Bucks players, because they got to perform this year in order to kind of keep their Bucks uniform in red and pewter. So let's start off with the guy that was on the graphic. Don't make a scene, but we might make a little bit of a scene when it comes to this player. Jamelle Dean. First of all, James, do you think that Jamelle Dean is on the hot seat? Because I got a couple of opinions, but curious to get yours first.
I think he's certainly a candidate to be on the hot seat, especially coming off of last season and the contract that they gave him. If he doesn't bounce back to form that earned him that contract, yeah. You know, the Bucks have that built in out to get out of that deal. And I don't think they'd be afraid to use it. I mean, this is a team that just got rid of Carlton Davis because there were, you know, contract issues on top of availability issues. You have Bruce Arians, the best ability is availability.
Yeah.
And Carlton Davis hasn't had much of that. So he gets to go to Detroit. And, you know, of course, I wish him the best of luck. But yet Jamel Dean is not coming off of a great season. And if he has another season in 24 like he had in 23, he's absolutely a candidate to end up being shown the door.
Yeah, I think the biggest issue for Jamel, and it's very similar with Carlton Davis, and it's really just a microcosm of the Buccaneers at corner, is he didn't make enough plays as a corner, i.e., I never use i.e. when saying example, so it's crazy. I just use it there. But for example, not having any interceptions last season. And the other part of it is that he gets injured often. And, you know, sometimes injuries are a finicky thing. You can't always, you know, predict when they're going to happen. But like you said, best ability is availability. And when the Bucs have a guy like Zion McCollum that week in and week out is going to the right side, and then, oh, Jamel's out, you're going to the left side. Then, oh, Carlton's out again, you're going to the right side. The only difference between Jamel Dean and Carlton Davis this offseason was that there was a newer deal to Jamel Dean, so they couldn't get rid of Jamel Dean if they even wanted to. If all things were the same and the contract numbers were similar, I think the Bucs, they obviously wouldn't have gotten rid of Carlton and Jamel, because that would have just been asinine. But I think there's a fair argument to be made that if all things were equal and they signed their deals at the same time, it could have been Jamel Dean who was the one that got traded or got released this year so the Bucs can get a little more salary cap cushion to those numbers for them this season. Because, you know, this picture right here, that was a costly, costly drop in the playoff game against Detroit, and the Lions ended up with a field goal, so it didn't burn the Bucs as much as it possibly could have, but it still hurt Tampa Bay in that situation. And I know Carlton and Jamel both couldn't catch the ball, but Jamel had two interceptions in 2022. They both came in week two, so deuces are wild right now, against the New Orleans Saints. He did not take the ball away ever since then and didn't have any last year. At least Carlton, while he still had a lot of his issues, did take the ball away twice. So if Jamel either has to play a full season or close to it or start taking the football away, if one of those things don't happen, it'll be very curious to see how the Bucs approach corner in the draft this year, because obviously they signed Bryce Hall and Tavier Thomas, but I don't know about this one.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. If all things were equal, I think it would have been Dean that you saw moved rather than Carlton Davis. But, you know, that picture speaks volumes. That happened directly in front of my face when I was there. And I remember just kind of tilting my head back and going, oh, my gosh, yeah, that you had it. Like, you're not going to get served up an interception better than that. And you mentioned it a couple of times now. He had no interceptions last season. That was his first season in his career without an interception.
Yeah.
Career low in passes defensed, career low in tackles for loss, and then a career high completion percentage allowed when targeted, allowing 66.1% of passes to be completed, and a career high in quarterback rating allowed when targeted with 111.0. So it was a rough year for Carlton Davis. And you know, as we've talked about, you know, the Bucs can get out of that contract after next season with a little under $7 million in dead money. And if he doesn't return to kind of what we saw that, you know, that 2020 season, that 2021 season, he's really in serious jeopardy of losing his job. And of course, Zion McCollum stepping up and playing all over the field. That's one of Todd Bowles' chess pieces that he mentioned. And you could be looking at a team that I know on Locked On Bucs, I've been pounding the table that edge rush is the number one need that they need to focus on in the first round, but they could go with a Cooper DeJean in the first round, or they could snag a TJ Tampa in the second round. And now all of a sudden you have a duo of McCollum and DeJean or McCollum and Tampa there as your corners. If Jamel Dean doesn't kind of step up and become that corner that had earned that contract to begin with.
Sal319 says, at this point, I have more faith in Zion than Dean. Carlton Davis and Dean are both made of glass. Narav with an interesting point as well. I think corner numbers stabilize once we get a pass rush going. That is something to, I think, at least consider a little bit. The Bucs struggled with a four-man pass rush. They obviously could generate it if they were sending, you know, Lavonte David or Antoine Winfield Jr. But yeah, if it was just a front four, they certainly had some of their issues. Let's stick with Zion McCollum for a little bit. What's your optimism for him this season? Because he's going to be the full-time starter. And in my opinion, James, I think, well, I shouldn't say he's going to be the full-time starter, but it's going to be his job to lose with Bryce Hall in the mix as well. And then depending on what happens with corner, but hypothetically right now on April 3rd, let's just say Zion McCollum is the starter for the Buccaneers this season. I think one really important caveat to all of this for Zion that will benefit him is, sure, he's already has the experience. He's played in a number of games, but he kept flip-flopping back and forth between the left and the right side, depending on who was out. I think keeping Zion just on one side, because we know he can adapt. I mean, he played safety in a playoff game last season because it was asked upon him. But I can only imagine if Zion is able to just hone his focus in on one side and not have to worry about learning a new position, learning, like, how to play on a different side of the field, which I think is a little bit tougher than people realize. I think that can go a long way for him this year.
Yeah, and I mean, you really just go back to the giant leap forward that McCollum took last year compared to his rookie season. He really started to come into his own, and we know that in Todd Bowles' defense, one of the most difficult things to do is to kind of adapt to that scheme as a member of the secondary, whether it's a safety or whether it's a corner. Todd Bowles asks so much of those guys that being a rookie, it's kind of a steep learning curve, and it can be really daunting for those guys. But McCollum really started to get comfortable, and now all of a sudden his number's getting called because Davis is out, because Dean is out, because you know, the safety position outside of Antoine Winfield Jr. was a hot mess. So being able to gain all of that legitimate experience, we're not talking training camp experience, we're not talking preseason experience, we're talking in-game experience, only helped bring Zion McCollum along. And I think he's really poised to have a breakout year this year if he continues on that trajectory. Now, it would be nice. We talk about Jamel Dean having trouble catching the ball. It'd be nice if Zion McCollum would stop dropping some of these passes that hit him right dead square in the hands or between the numbers. But yeah, again, I go back to how much he struggled as a rookie. And he was a player that I really liked when the Bucks drafted him, but had those serious growing pains. Well, then he took that giant leap forward with all of the times that he had to fill in. And I think Zion can actually really turn some heads this coming season. He's going to have his work cut out for him. There's no doubt about it, but I think he's up to the task. And this is a guy again, who we had his college coach on the show back when he was drafted. And he talked about, you know, this is a guy that shut down Christian Watson in college, but as a freshman, as a sophomore, he really struggled to grasp what he needed to do. He put in a lot of extra hours, put in a lot of extra time, and then really started to click his third year in. You're really going to see kind of something similar, a little bit slow on the learning and the developing, but once he gets it, he takes it to another level really quickly.
Yeah, I mean, that you're spot on with that, and obviously hearing it from the coach, who better to get that opinion from. Zion will never admit to this, but I truly think, too, if you remember when he was a rookie, he had an injury in training camp and missed a fair amount of time in training camp. And I think, especially for a rookie at corner, because it reminds me a little bit, different position, but a wide receiver, Scotty Miller, when he was a rookie, he had a hamstring injury and he missed a lot of it and really was just an afterthought in his rookie season with the Buccaneers. We all know what he went on to do, the big catch against Green Bay in the NFC Championship game. But I think with rookies, it's really vital that you're able to just soak up what it means to play in the NFL in training camp early on. Maybe I could be flat out wrong because Kalijah Kansi looked pretty damn good once he got it going. But Kalijah Kansi, I think, is quickly proving that he's just something different compared to a lot of different guys. We'll talk plenty about Kalijah Kansi some other time. We are going to speak about the defensive line now. Another player that is very much on the hot seat this year. The Bucs did not pick up his fifth-year option. So this is the final season for outside linebacker Joe Tryon-Shoyinka, potentially. with the Buccaneers. And this could be a different looking JTS this season. Todd Bowles has spoken about that he's going to play JTS in a joker role. So maybe just not your traditional outside linebacker. Could line up inside a little bit, which he's done before. Maybe lines up at inside linebacker for a play. But JTS, it's been a little uninspiring, to say the least. I don't think he's met expectations. He's been here for three seasons now, has 13 sacks. Did have 5 sacks last year, but I think some of that was motivation later in the year after he got benched in favor for Yaya Diaby, who ended up with 7.5 sacks on the season. By the way, that big strip sack that he had against the Carolina Panthers late in the season, that was his first ever forced fumble, which was very surprising to me. But James, what do you think about JTS going into this season? It just feels like it's now or never for Joe Tryon-Shanka, because he got benched. Did he get the message, though? Because he did kind of turn it on at the end of the year. Maybe that's kind of what JTS needed.
Yeah, well, and you'd think we would be excited talking about a player who is coming off of a career high in sacks, a career high in tackles, a career high in tackles for loss, but the numbers still aren't impressive, right? So, you know, you go from 75% of defensive snaps in 2022 to 51% last year. And maybe he did get the message, but I keep going back to, you know, Todd Bowles. And again, this is another one of his quote unquote chess pieces that he likes for this year. And to me, it's kind of a low risk, high reward situation for the Buccaneers' usage of Joe Tryon-Shoyinka this year. So Todd Bowles has talked about moving him all over the defense, that he's not really this pure edge rusher like they were hoping he was going to be, but now he can go out there. He can play a little looser. He can play a little more free, doing all these different things, lining up all over the field. And if he gives you the same production that he's given you the last 3 years, fine. That's kind of what you come to expect out of Tryon-Shoyinka. And if he blows up, well, that's fantastic. It means you're going to pay more if you want to keep him around in free agency next year. But you have a situation now where it's either the norm or it's through the roof, and now the defense is that much better. Somebody in the chat mentioned, now the secondary looks better because you have more guys getting after the quarterback, forcing them off their spots, forcing them to get rid of the ball before they want to, and you have that trickle-down effect. So it's really disappointing to see that Joe Tryon-Shoyinka hasn't panned out quite the way that they were hoping. But at the same time, coming into this season, you know, it's kind of a low stress, low pressure for JTS, because he's either going to ball out or he's going to move on.
I think what's frustrating about JTS, and I really like him as a person, and I think he's like an okay player. I think where the frustration lies is that he was a first round pick, and this is the production that they're getting. Like, if they drafted Joe Tryon-Shoyinka where they drafted his fellow outside linebacker, Anthony Nelson, I think everyone would be ecstatic about Joe Tryon-Shoyinka. They'd be like, wow, JTS, for where we got him, this is a steal. He's doing some great stuff. It's the fact that he has the tagline of being a first-round pick that I think hurts a lot of guys. And I still think about, I guess we're going down memory lane on today's show. I still think about, like, when JPP was here in his last season, and JPP was so important to the Bucs as a whole, helped them win a Super Bowl. But that last year, he was playing through a torn rotator cuff, and he's got that warrior mentality. He wants to play no matter what. And I wish at times the Bucs just said, hey, Jason, we're either going to sit you down for this game and not make you active, or we're going to give a lot more reps to Joe Tryon-Shoyinka. Because I do think that early on experience, I think, would have helped him the second year, which would have helped him like last year as well. But he didn't necessarily get that because the Bucs are still very much in win now mode. And why not go with a veteran like Jason Pierre-Paul? I still think JTS can bring value to this team. I mean, I think he's very solid at stopping the run still. And he's crazy athletic. I'm not willing to say that he's a looks like Tarzan, plays like Jane type of situation, but I very much think with his athletic ability and what he can do, this Joker role is very exciting. And if you're the Bucks, why not try to test this out? Why be stubborn and continue to line him up at outside linebacker and let him do the same thing over and over again? Because a lot of the story about Joe Tryon-Shoyinka has been he can get around the tackle. He can get to the backfield. It's been the last 5% of the job that's really been the issue for Joe Tryon-Shoyinka. So if you put him on the interior and let him kind of just create penetration to make the quarterback go to the outside where Yaya can clean up, or you put him in some crazy roles where he can just blitz instead and use that speed. One thing we know about Todd Bowles is that he will come up with crazy, chaotic blitzes. Vita Vea at linebacker, Levante David out on the edge. The world is Todd Bowles' oyster. Why not see what you do? And if it fails, you're in the same situation that you were just in with JTS.
Yeah, well, and not only that, and we know how much the injury bug hit the Buccaneers last year. And if the injury bug hits you at edge rusher, well, now you have this kind of rotational Joker role that it also provides you depth at another position. We're still going to see JTS line up on the edge. It'll still happen.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen as often. And sometimes he'll be, you know, up on the line with his hand in the dirt. Sometimes he'll drop and he'll line up next to Levante in the middle of the field. He'll be all over the place, but worst case scenario, you know, you still have that guy that you can line up on the edge if you need to. If Yaya goes down, if Anthony Nelson isn't pulling his weight in his rotational role, if they draft a guy at 26, like a Chop Robinson or a Darius Robinson, and they're not really getting it early on, you can pivot back and you could still have JTS on the edge. And again, you know what you're going to get out of him. You're going to get 4 to 5 sacks. You're going to get plenty of pressures. He may not be able to actually bring the quarterback down, but you're going to get that long athletic frame with those long arms in the quarterback's face and hopefully force some bad decisions, some errant throws, and allow Winfield and Whitehead and McCollum and Dean to create some turnovers there in the secondary.
It is interesting, too, because there's that little dangling carrot there with Jose Ramirez, who was on the practice squad last year, and especially Marquise Watts, who made a splash last year. So it is a little bit of that, hey, what's on the other side of the fence here? I know there's that saying, the grass isn't always greener, but we've seen a little bit with Marquise Watts. We've gotten a taste of it that kind of makes you want to see a little bit more. So it's kind of like, well, if they were to try to trade JTS or just full-blown bench him or whatever, what could we see with Marquise Watts and Jose Ramirez? But then you look at the other side of it, to your point, they have little to no experience at all, and you'd rather at least have an experienced type of player in that rotation. Shout out to Josue Ortiz. Thank you for the $9.99 super chat. As Josue says, love this union of my two favorite Bucks channels. Nice to see a collab here. For both, how much of a threat is, I think you're trying to say, Canales and this Falcons team? Well, Canales is coaching the Panthers. Maybe you mean or this Falcons team as well. Let's handle it that way. That's how I interpret it. Dave Canales, obviously, he knows the Bucks offensively in and out. Love Dave Canales. Had a great chat with him over at the Bucks annual meeting. Wish him very well with the Panthers. I still think Carolina is a season or two away from truly being a thorn in the Bucs side. They made some moves this offseason kind of along the defensive line. They obviously traded Brian Burns, though. They lost Frankie Louvu as well. So while they gained some replacements on the defensive line, I feel like it kind of evens out with who they lost. And Brian Burns wasn't even a crazy threat to the Buccaneers. I know he's a great edge rusher, but to the Bucs, didn't really do too much damage. The big question for the Panthers as well is, can Dave Canales do with Bryce Young what he did with Geno Smith, and specifically what he did with Baker Mayfield? Still don't love all of the weapons that the Panthers have. They don't have a first-round pick, so even if they go at wide receiver, there's still going to be a number of guys off the board. That's why I still feel like Canales could be a problem. Just, I don't think this season just yet. Atlanta, I keep going back to this. Obviously, the big move, Kirk Cousins. Everyone has, oh, the Falcons are the team to beat. How much better is this Falcons team than the Vikings team that Kirk Cousins was just on? I don't think insurmountably better with Kirk Cousins coming over here. Kirk Cousins has always struggled in the big moment, in primetime. We've seen it time and time again. Now, all of a sudden, with the biggest expectations he's ever had in his career, now all of a sudden he's going to put it together. You know, I think you got to prove it to me before I'm just going to crown the Atlanta Falcons the winners of the NFC South. But we saw everyone doubt the Bucs last year. You want to doubt the Bucs again? Fine. They love that. That's in their DNA. But James, your thoughts about this?
Yeah, I think with Dave Canales, it's too much too soon. We saw kind of his midseason struggles working with the offense. We saw some of that stubbornness that he stuck with. And down the stretch, it ended up working out. But I find it kind of funny now that we have Dave Canales in what I feel is going to be kind of the Buccaneers Raheem Morris mold, where it's going to be too much too soon. He's going to be let go within the next couple of years, mostly because their quarterback is terrible. I was not a Bryce Young guy coming out in the draft last year. I don't think that Canales is going to be able to fix him because I just don't think he's very good. I could be wrong. I also didn't believe in CJ Stroud, and that blew up in my face. But then you're going to see Canales kind of relegated to an assistant role, work his way back up to a coordinator role before he gets another opportunity as a head coach. And again, I could be wrong. I wish Dave Canales nothing but the best because he was such a nice dude. He was great to talk to. He was a lot of fun, really energetic. I just don't think that this Panthers job with that ownership and that roster was the right move for Canales. There's only 32 of those jobs. You got to take them when you have the opportunity. As for the Falcons, I actually did a deep dive on Kirk Cousins and why I don't think that, you know, the Falcons hype is really worth it. They're a talented football team.
And they're a better team.
And with the coaching staff, I think Raheem Morris is going to be a really good head coach. But Kirk Cousins is the greatest quarterback of all time in terms of getting money. Like, his agent just fleeces everybody to the point that his career earnings are higher than Tom Brady's. But he's not going to come in and save that team. He's not going to come in and all of a sudden make them a Super Bowl contender. He's going to make them better than they were, but I mean, I would still take Baker over Kirk Cousins pretty much any day of the week and twice on Sundays.
There you have it. Thanks to Paul, a.k.a. Florida Dreamhouse, for this $5 super chat. He says, my two favorite podcasters on one show, Matt, James is no JTS fan, LOL. Looking forward to the draft, OTAs, preseason, and 2024 season. Appreciate Pewter Report and Locked on Bucks. We appreciate you as well, Paul, a.k.a. Florida Dreamhouse. Love when you guys get excited about the show. It's almost as excited as I get when I get to have a Celsius energy drink, which, of course, is the official energy drink of PewterReport.com. Check out all the great flavors that Celsius has, including their newest line of Celsius, the Celsius Essentials. These are the tall boys of Celsius. They have 270 milligrams of caffeine, so if you're looking for a little extra oomph, a little extra push to get you through your day, check out these Celsius Essentials. They got great flavors such as the Blue Crush and the Dragonberry. Don't forget about the OG flavors of Celsius as well. The Arctic Vibe is my personal favorite. Can't go wrong with the Peach Vibe or the Strawberry Lemonade, Fuji Apple Pear, Cucumber Lime. You get the point. So many awesome, great flavors of Celsius. If you need to know where to find a Celsius energy drink, maybe you're anywhere in the continental United States, don't worry. They got you covered. Go to the Celsius store locator on their website. Punch in your address, and it'll tell you the closest location where you can pick one up. Could be a Walmart, Target, 7-Eleven, health and fitness store. Or if you're lucky enough, you could be going to your bodega. We did it when we were in Orlando. We did it when we were in Indianapolis. All over, just use the store locator. Once you know that you love Celsius, you want to get more because you don't want to make 1,000 trips to your bodega. That's when you could buy it in bulk over on Amazon. Go to the subscribe and save. I should say click on the subscribe and save. You can have it sent to your place of residence whenever you want. I'd recommend getting that variety pack because variety is the spice of life. And you heard me talk about all these great flavors of Celsius. So why not enjoy as many as possible? So have it set up to be sent to your place of residence whenever you want. Could be a week, month, quarterly, yearly. You're in charge. You're the captain now. Just make sure you're drinking Celsius energy drinks. Make Celsius your number one pick during this draft season. Celsius, the official energy drink of the Pewter Report podcast. This next player we're about to talk about, we're moving to the offensive side of the football for a little bit, could be a tad bit controversial because he is a beloved player. We talked about him a little bit on yesterday's show. He's been vital to the Buccaneers throughout these past couple of seasons, but might be do or die time for wide receiver Chris Godwin. And the reason why I say this is the Bucs are going into this year with two wide receivers that are getting paid over $20 million. Of course, I'm talking about Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. There is no debate. There was a debate at one point around 2020, 2021. Who's the best receiver on the Buccaneers? Is it Mike Evans? Is it Chris Godwin? Or was it Antonio Brown for a little bit? Obviously, Antonio Brown literally took himself out of the race when he stopped playing for the Bucs in that infamous game against the Jets. But now there is no debate. There is no discussion who was wide receiver one for the Buccaneers. It is Mike Evans. He had another year of over 1,000 yards, led the Bucs in receiving yards, led the Bucs in touchdowns as well. Chris Godwin, not so much the case. He did get over 1,000 yards, if I'm not mistaken, but the touchdowns were much further down. Yeah, Chris Godwin had 1,024 yards on the season, two regular season receiving touchdowns, did score a tutty in that playoff game against the Eagles as well. The reason why I say Chris Godwin is, you know, on the hot seat, needs to have a better year this season is because the Bucs can't go much further paying two wide receivers $20 million a season with the production that Chris Godwin gave. If this was Chris Godwin in 2019, when he was unreal and had 1,300 receiving yards and 9 touchdowns, or if you guys remember 2020, he was great, but 2021, those like 3 or 4 games that he had right before he got hit by the Saints and tore his ACL. Those were some unreal moments by Chris Godwin. If the Bucs were getting that Chris Godwin, I would have no problem with them trying to sign him to an extension this year because he's in the last season of his contract. But since he's come back from his torn ACL, he's still a good player. He's a solid player. I don't know if he's a $20 million per year player. And when you look at the Bucs potentially going wide receiver in round one or round two, and with the talent of wide receiver that's available in this draft and Trey Palmer kind of waiting in the wings, if they go with like Keon Coleman or someone like that in round one, Chris Godwin could be the odd man out after this season in the sense of the Bucs may say, we don't want to re-sign Chris. You can go to free agency and see if you can get that money. But that's why I think it's a make or break year for Chris Godwin.
It's hard to disagree, but it also hurts my soul.
Yeah, I get that. It's not easy. It's a nasty business.
I mean, look, three straight 1,000-yard seasons, but on the flip side of that, fewest receptions since 2020, fewest receiving touchdowns since his rookie year when he got his first touchdown in the final minute of the final game to win that one and sent a lot of Bucs fans into a tizzy because it hurt their draft position. Lowest catch percentage since 2018, fewest yards per game since 2018. And I take a look, and I've been talking about this quite a bit on my show. I actually have a deep dive on Chris Godwin and potentially replacing him coming up over at Locked On Bucs. But you take a look at kind of the tale of two seasons for Chris Godwin, right? He was a non-factor for like the first half of the year last year. And then all of a sudden was able to turn it up, turn it on, and become a huge impact player. But with Liam Cohen coming to town and being the offensive coordinator and talking about utilizing Chris Godwin in that Cooper Kupp role, I think Chris Godwin is poised to have one of the best seasons of his career. And you move him back to that slot position where, you know, he had 63% or more of his snaps coming out of the slot from 2019 to 2022. Last year, 37.5% of his snaps were out of the slot. And that's where he's most effective. That's where he does his most damage, creates those mismatches, you know, is the move the sticks guy. He's the money down guy. And you get him back in that role and utilize him the same way Cooper Kupp was utilized when Liam Cohen was in Los Angeles, and he could absolutely explode. And I understand the trepidation and the logistics of trying to pay two of these wide receivers 20 plus million per year. I don't know that Chris Godwin gets 20 million plus a year on the open market. I know SpotTrack has his estimated market value at 21 million a year for next year's free agency. But think about the free agency class that he's going to be joining. You know, Keenan Allen, T. Higgins, Amari Cooper, DeAndre Hopkins, possibly Justin Jefferson, CeeDee Lamb, Ja'Marr Chase, Brandon Ayuk, Devonta Smith, Mike Williams. Like, that is a loaded free agent wide
receiver. Way more than the last time he was a free agent.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, not all those guys are going to hit free agents.
Sure, extensions.
Ja'Marr Chase isn't going to go anywhere. I don't think CeeDee Lamb's going to go anywhere. Justin Jefferson might want to get the heck out of Minnesota. I hear there's an opening in Buffalo that he would probably do really well with.
That's huge news today.
But if the Bucs can get an extension with Chris Godwin done before the season, during the season, you know, and alleviate part of that $27.5 million cap hit that he has this year and lock him up maybe for a little less than 20 million, you know, on a 2-year extension. I think that's kind of the best scenario, because then that ties him with Mike Evans' contract, with Baker Mayfield's contract. You have that continuity there where you have those three guys together for this final, you know, push, essentially, when the South is there for the taking and the NFC is wide open with the vast majority of the best teams being in the AFC. It's going to be an easier path to the Super Bowl through the NFC. You have Detroit, you have San Francisco, you have Philadelphia. Outside of that, it's pretty much wide open. So, you know, I agree. It's so hard to pay two wide receivers 20 plus million a year, especially with the production we've seen out of Godwin the past few years. But my fear would be if Godwin is utilized the way Cooper Kupp was, and all of a sudden he's looking at 1,400 yards and a dozen touchdowns, you're not getting him back.
I really like your point about, one, he's in a contract year, and players tend to perform better when they are in a contract year and you're thinking about getting paid for that next season in mind. But a big thing with Liam Cohen coming in, as you said, Cohen is going to have Chris Godwin play in the slot, which is when he benefited the most, when he was at his best. So that is huge for Chris Godwin specifically. It wasn't bad trying the experiment on the outside with Godwin. It just wasn't as good as what he's best at. It's kind of like a couple seasons ago. It's a little bit different because I'm talking about defense for a moment. But when the Bucs moved Antoine Winfield Jr. to nickel corner and he played in the slot, he was good at it. He was solid. But he's at his best when he's at free safety, getting named first team All-Pro. And that's what makes wide receiver 3 on this year's roster even more important for the Bucs than it has been in the last 2 or 3 seasons. Because if you get a Keon Coleman, or Malachi Corley plays in the slot, but he's a guy that we love here at PeterReport.com. But if you get a Keon Coleman on the outside and you get Chris Godwin on the inside, just makes your offense that much more dangerous. We also have a little bit of breaking news. I would love to keep talking about Chris Godwin, but there is a little bit of breaking news. Greg Allman of Fox Sports has just reported that the Bucs are signing edge rusher Randy Gregory to the roster. So Gregory obviously played with the Dallas Cowboys for quite a while. Last year was with Denver and San Francisco. Now, there is a tie-in to this Bucs defense. George Edwards, being the outside linebackers coach, had previously coached Randy Gregory with the Dallas Cowboys when they were both there in Dallas. So this brings another piece to the puzzle, especially for depth at outside linebacker. I'm not trying to put you on the spot, James, but breaking news is breaking news.
That's right.
This changes the Bucs' plans for sure with their first round draft pick because edge rusher was in the mix. And maybe it doesn't preclude the Bucs from still taking an edge rusher, but now we're talking about Yaya Diaby, Randy Gregory, Joe Triantchenko, Anthony Nelson, and then you still have Marquise Watts and Jose Ramirez waiting in the wings. If you add in another outside linebacker, you're going to have a pretty good player not on the roster this year that is going to have to be on the practice squad again because of all the guys we just mentioned. Last season, he had 3.5 sacks overall between Denver and San Francisco. Never had more than 6 sacks in a season. His best year was in 2018. He recorded 6. And in 2021, he recorded 6 as well. Had a bit of an injury issue in 2022, his first year with Denver. But now gets a new opportunity playing with a coach he's familiar with in George Edwards and brings another piece to Tampa Bay. As far as edge rusher goes, we obviously don't know the financials just yet. It came out. But if this is a cheap veteran deal, veteran minimum, or something that's not too overly inexpensive, I think it's a good idea to bring in a veteran edge rusher that maybe that's all he does. Maybe only Randy Gregory comes in on third down. He can pin his ears back, get after the quarterback, only have him focus on one job. I don't think it's a bad idea by the Bucs to make this move.
No, not at all. And like you said, it really opens the door for them to do a lot of different things now in the first round. It would still be nice to see them get an edge rusher. You know, if a Jared Verse or a Latu falls to him, or even if Latu, we're starting to see him fall in some of these mock drafts. If he gets to the late teens, early 20s to see Jason Light make a move to go up and go get him, I think that really changes everything. I do really like the addition of Randy Gregory. I don't love the missed tackle percentage from last year, 26%. Yeah. That's not good. But this is a guy who creates a lot of pressure, gets after the quarterback a lot, and while it doesn't always result in sacks, like you mentioned, he career high is 6 in a season that he had with Dallas in 2021. You know, he is a guy that takes away a lot of the focus for the opposing offense. They have to account for him, yes, or he will make them pay. So now if you have him lining up opposite of Yaya Diaby coming off of a very impressive rookie campaign when he really didn't even play all that much, now all of a sudden it's pick your poison. Do we have to make sure that our focus is on Gregory and make sure he doesn't get to the quarterback, or do we focus on the young guy and then let Gregory go one-on-one with whoever he's up against? It just really opens up a lot of options. And it goes back to our conversation earlier about Joe Triantchenko. Now, all of a sudden, you don't have to rely on him as much to be that depth guy at edge rusher should someone suffer an injury, because now Gregory's in the mix. You still have Yaya. You have Anthony Nelson. You mentioned Watts. You mentioned Jose Ramirez. Yeah. You have these other guys that can work their way in now. So now you're still able to use JTS in that joker role, regardless of what's going on edge rush. I still expect them to add another one in the first 2 days, but maybe now that opens the door for them to go wide receiver or go corner in the first round of the draft, rather than being hyper-focused on edge rush.
Bucks taking a little bit of a gamble with this Randy Gregory move. You could take a little bit of a gamble if you want to. Over at mybookie.ag, we got the NBA and NHL in full swing. The Final Four is taking place this weekend. Baseball just began. I actually put in a bet before of the Red Sox -1.5 over the Oakland A's, because the Oakland A's absolutely stink as an organization. My point being, if you want to go gamble on a little bit, sign up at MyBookie using the promo code PEWTER. That's PEWTER. Get a first deposit bonus when you sign up. That's free money, absolutely free money in your MyBookie account. Even if you learn from Plant City Math, you know that is a heck of a deal. So check out MyBookie.ag. Use the promo code PEWTER. Do some parlays, dabble in some different sports, and take a look at their online casino as well. Not everybody can go and travel to the casino when they want to. They have all the great online casino stuff, whether it's roulette, craps, blackjack. You can enjoy it from the comfort of your couch. So check out MyBookie. Use that promo code Pewter. That's P-E-W-T-E-R. Next player we are going to talk about as we start wrapping up the show is Robert Hainsey. I don't think this comes as too much of a surprise. Bucks have had the worst run game per average over the last 2 years. It's not all on Robert Hainsey, but it's clear that they can use an upgrade. It's not even Robert Hainsey's fault as well. I mean, Ryan Jensen got hurt 2 seasons ago, so he had to be the guy. And then, again, there was hope that Ryan Jensen was going to play and wasn't able to. I think he's very solid as a backup. I do think they can use an upgrade at center as they also figure out left guard. Wouldn't hate Jackson Powers Johnson if he's available with that first pick, especially now after the Randy Gregory move.
Yeah, Robert Hainsey's struggles last year, again, kind of hurt my heart. My older son is a diehard Notre Dame fan, so he was super pumped when the Buccaneers took a member of the Fighting Irish. Fingers crossed they take another one in Audric Estime, but that's a conversation for another day. But in 2022, you know, according to PFF, and of course, I don't view PFF as gospel, but it's a nice tool to be able to utilize and take a look at things. They ranked him the 13th center in the NFL in 2022, which is pretty solid. Last year, 32nd, a massive drop-off for Robert Hainsey. He allowed 27 pressures, which was the 12th most among starting centers, and allowed 4 sacks. Last year, his run block win rate was 59.5%. That's, you cannot have that. For the anchor of your offensive line to lose over 40% in run blocking is inexcusable. And I think it got to a point last year where if the Bucks had another option, they would have moved to it. But yeah, Robert Hainsey was it. Like, that was the guy. So you take a look at some of the offensive linemen in this draft that they could bring in. A lot of these guys that are slated to be guards are centers that are projected to move to guard, or tackles that are projected to move to guard. I think if the Bucks can land a center slash guard, we're going to have a competition at two different positions between Robert Hainsey and whoever that draft pick is. Because if the rookie is performing better at center, it might behoove the Bucks to move Robert Hainsey back to the position where he dominated at Notre Dame, get him back over to guard, and then have a true center anchoring the offensive line. And I think all around that immediately improves the offensive line. Maybe Hainsey just isn't cut out for life as a center, and I think he is a starting caliber guard, especially in Tampa, lining up next to Tristan Wirfs. But it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out, because Robert Hainsey may already have lost his starting center job, but we just don't know it yet.
Yeah, I've thought about that as well, where if they take Jackson Powers Johnson, or say they want to play Graham Barden at center, for example, then just Hainsey... Then does Hainsey just jump in and get into the competition with guard? Like, what if they just slide him over to one spot? And I don't think it hurts to add more competition, because then it truly will be the best man winning that job. And worst case scenario, he's your backup center, and you're not like stressing or freaking out if something happens to the starting center. You just input Robert Hainsey, and you kind of keep things going. Last two players we're going to talk about, we can kind of just get into it pretty quickly. The two players I had on my list, Kyle Trask, who obviously is not going to be starting, and Cole Kieft. Trask, I think it's pretty obvious. He's in the last year of his deal. He hasn't won the starting job. He's not going to win the starting job with the contract they just gave Baker Mayfield. Yes, the ownership and front office has ties to Trask because they drafted him, but Liam Cohen has no affiliation or anything with Kyle Trask outside of scouting him back in the day when helping out the Rams and just looking at quarterbacks. So if they find a guy they like in this year's draft, I don't think it would stop them from having one more year with Trask and then letting him go on his merry way. The other one for Cole Kieft, I mean, at this point, he's a glorified fullback. He doesn't provide anything in the passing game, despite scoring one touchdown last year on his only catch of the season. You know, he's a fullback, again, on a running team that was last in the NFL for 2 years in a row. So I don't really know what he provides to the Bucs outside of he is a good locker room guy, glue guy, friends with a lot of the top players. But, yeah, I don't know. I think the Bucs won't really regret – I shouldn't say regret, but the Bucs won't have too many issues if this is the last year for Trask and Cole Keith.
Yeah, with Trask, I mean, obviously he was drafted to be a backup to Brady. He's continuing to be a backup now for Baker. He can try the open market. I don't know. Of course, the NFL landscape this time next year is going to be completely different than it is right now, but I don't know what team would bring Trask in to be a starter. I don't see a Mike Glennon to the Bears situation. And even that kind of blew up in everybody's face when they invited Mike Glennon to the draft party just to watch him.
Yeah.
You know, watch them draft the quarterback. But you know, Trask, I think if he's a career backup, he's a career backup, and there's nothing wrong with that. That still means that you're one of the most elite human beings on the planet to play that position. There's only what 96 quarterbacks at most in the NFL every year. So, I mean, that's 0.001% of people that have ever even played that position. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, my idol is Ryan Griffin. I mean, imagine making millions of dollars.
Yeah, great career for him.
Yeah. I mean, you show up at practice, you never get hit, and you're coming away with, you know, generational money, you know, good for him. I never bought in to Kyle Trask, watching him during training camp, watching him during preseason. I do think he did well in preseason compared to previous years last year, but I never saw him as a starting caliber quarterback. And you go back and you wonder what could have been with that second round pick. But, you know, if he moves on, great. If he stays as a backup, great. It is what it is. As far as Cole Keith is concerned, he's doing basically what the Bucs drafted him to do. And you mentioned, you know, he's essentially a fullback. I would have liked to have seen him line up in the backfield a couple of times, give Rashad White or Chase Edmonds a lead blocker wasn't up on the line of scrimmage. And I think the utilization of him there would have been fantastic, especially in goal line situations or fourth and one situations. But we kind of knew when he was drafted, he's not a pass catcher. You know, he's when he catches a pass, everybody gets hyped and excited because it's not something that really ever happens. But he was brought in to be a blocking tight end. He's been a blocking tight end. Again, I could see him sticking around and signing another deal because it's not going to be expensive. He's not going to have a huge market in free agency. So if he keeps doing what he's doing, I think he's going to be all right. But I also fully expect the Bucs to bring in another tight end, probably after the draft. I don't see them taking one draft weekend, but you bring in a low cost veteran pass catching tight end to go with Kate Otten, to go with Payne Durham, who came on, you know, pretty well at the end of the year. Took a little while, but he started to make a couple of plays here and there late in the year. So yeah, Cole Keith is who we thought he was, and he's playing the role that he needs to play.
I think a lot of Bucs fans would be in agreement that they would have liked to see Cole Keith kind of leading the way on some of those short yardage run plays. If you need a top-notch realtor to lead the way, whether you're buying or selling a home, the best person to work with is the official realtor of PewterReport.com. That is Eric Gross and the Eric Gross Group. Shout out to Eric and Caitlin Gross, who both work together. It takes a full team effort to win a football game, and it takes a full team effort to win in real estate. The Eric Gross Group has done hundreds of transactions in this crazy real estate market and has experience in all types of situations. Eric is an avid Pewter Report reader. He's been on the podcast before, and he's a Tampa native whose father was stationed at MacDill Air Force Base. He and his team have the market knowledge, top-notch communication, and commitment to excellent service that sets them apart. With their strong team of vendors and a network of over 85,000 agents, the Eric Gross Group will turn your dream of buying or selling a home into a reality. Their clients are not just transactions, they are lifelong friendships. Don't let the stress of buying or selling a home keep you out of the game. Let the Eric Gross Group take the pressure off. Find them on Facebook and Instagram at Eric Gross Group. Check out their website, housesinfla.com, or give them a call at 513-907-4271. Again, their website is housesinfla.com, and their number is 513-907-4271. No matter where you are on your home ownership journey, you'll feel welcome with the Eric Gross Group, the official realtor of PewterReport.com. Guys, we've had a great show today. We got a very special one coming up tomorrow with NFL Films. Greg Cosell. Topic will be, can Baker Mayfield do it again? Scott Reynolds will be on the show tomorrow. Again, NFL Films, Greg Cosell, awesome analyst, can break down the film like anybody around this league. So we're very excited to talk about Baker Mayfield and Liam Cohen on tomorrow's show. Greg Allman did reschedule. We're going to have Greg on next Tuesday. So look forward to that. On Tuesday's show, we'll talk about all of the NFC South with Fox Sports' own Greg Allman. And, of course, we got shows Monday through Thursday at 4 p.m. each week, including tomorrow's show with Greg Cosell. James, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. One more time, please just tell everybody where they can find your work and what you're doing these days.
Yeah, I'm the deputy editor over at BucksNation.com. Right now, we're profiling a different draft prospect every day leading up to the draft. Guys that could go in the first round, guys that could go in the seventh round, but that fit what the Buccaneers need. So make sure you check that out. New ones every single day. The last one that I did was on Audric Estime. As you can tell, I'm a big fan of his and what he can bring to the running back room. So make sure you go check that out. And then Monday through Friday, on the Locked On Bucks podcast, available wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. I go live every Friday and live intermittently here and there. Mostly, you know, shows are pre-recorded and drop in the mornings, but make sure you check that out. And Matt, it was a pleasure, man. I always enjoy chatting with you and Scott and, of course, Bailey and all you guys over at Pewter Report. You guys just keep crushing it. And yeah. Pleasure to be here and excited to do it again sometime.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have you on again. Really enjoy chatting with you. So make sure you follow all of James's stuff and the show. And then after you do that, please follow us on our social media on X, Facebook, and Instagram. We are at Pewter Report. And our YouTube channel is Pewter Report TV. We got the podcast four times a week, various clips, whether it's opinions or reaction videos to stuff, such as the new signing of Randy Gregory. We got various things from practice each day during the season with press conferences and all that great stuff. So tons of content over at Pewter Report TV, our YouTube channel. Please like and subscribe and leave a comment as well. Please subscribe. We're trying to get those numbers up. So appreciate all of the Pewter people. That's going to do it for us on today's show. For James Yarko, I'm Matt Matera saying thanks everybody for watching, and we'll see you tomorrow at 4 p.m. for another edition of the Pewter Report podcast. Out.